If you work in university maintenance, Grainger considers you an MVP. Because your playbook ensures your arena is always ready for tip-off. And Grainger is your trusted partner, offering the products you need, all in one place. From HVAC and plumbing supplies to lighting and more. And all delivered with plenty of time left on the clock. So your team always gets the win. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, visit Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Aces on the Air.
They got the bucket, a Turnbull came from the weak side and recycled the shot. A game-saving play by Turnbull.
The official podcast for Evansville Athletics.
Ground ball the right side, McGinnis Fields. He throws the first. They've done it! For the first time in program history, Evansville has won a regional. The Purple Aces are off to the Sweet 16.
Aces on the Air is brought to you by Taroni's Pizzeria and Brewery. Claim a $3 off voucher at any 2025-2026 UE Athletic event on campus.
The turn on to first. Two! A double play! And it's ball game! Evansville fans have won in 18 long years! For the first time since 2006, the Aces are Missouri Valley Conference Tournament Champions!
Every episode of Aces on the Air is available on Spotify, Apple, and online at GoPurpleAces.com.
Elevates on a three. It's an air ball. Wow. And the Aces have gone the road to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and stunned the number one Wildcats 67-64. They shock college basketball this Tuesday night.
Now, here's the voice of the Aces, Jevin Redmond.
From the Purple Aces Sports Network, this is Aces on the Air, brought to you by Taroni's and powered by Learfield. I'm Jevin Redmond. Episode 50 this week is with Harry Lyles Jr. He covers college football with ESPN, has several different roles across the ESPN platform. We're going to talk about his career and his ties to Evansville, support of the Purple Aces, especially men's basketball. A lot to cover here in this week's episode of Aces on the Air. Harry, thanks for joining us this week. It's always great to see you and chat with you. How are things?
Things are good, Jevin. It's always always good to spend some time in or with Evansville in this case. So happy to be here, man. And obviously, I'm also a big fan of your work as well, man. So good to be here.
We're going to talk about a lot of different things, but I mentioned you're covering college football for ESPN. You're on several of their platforms and doing several different things. Just kind of update fans on what your role is with ESPN right now.
Yeah, so still doing college football mainly. During this time of year, it's a little bit more college basketball. So I do Countdown to College Game Day for football during football season, as well as sideline reporting on Thursday nights on ESPN. Usually a lot of Sun Belt American games, some ACC in there as well. And then during college basketball season, I'm doing Countdown to College Game Day. It's the same show, different format. I do that from Bristol and not on site with College Game Day. So a lot of flights to snowy Connecticut this football off season, but it's been a fun one. And so mostly that. I'll probably get into some writing. I still do that in pockets here and there. So a lot of football preview stuff getting ready to come down the pipeline for me.
How'd you break into this field? Not necessarily with ESPN. I know you were with SB Nation before you went to ESPN. You did a lot of writing. So you're from Atlanta. How did you kind of break into this gig?
You know, for me, I always kind of knew I wanted to do it. My dad worked in radio. And so naturally in our house, not only did we consume radio, but local news, national news, sports, I mean, you name it, any kind of television, any kind of media, was always just sort of into it. Grew up a big Stuart Scott fan, obviously, like a lot of people did. And so I always knew that this is a space that eventually I wanted to get into. Now, if you'd have told younger me, like, well, how's it going to go? Like, I would have told you, like, I would have played for the Atlanta Braves or something like that, and hopefully had a professional sports career, right? That's like what we all want. Didn't quite work out that way. And I think once I sort of learned what a great work ethic looked like for athletes, because I had a buddy that actually played college football at Georgia Southern, was an offensive lineman, ended up being a strength coach. And I honestly felt like I found my work ethic through the gym, because once I saw the actual physical exertion and limits you could push yourself to, I was like, okay, so this is what it takes. By that time, it was too late. And I said, all right, well, let me apply this to the thing that I know I still want to do. And that's this. And that's really how I feel like I got into this. I knew I wanted to do television, but started off in writing, because when I was younger, 21, 22 years old, I'm still introverted, which is hard for people to believe given what I have to do for my job. But my introverted nature, was still very shy, so was camera shy, was not quite ready for that. Saw a path in writing that I felt like I could take, and then, build up the necessary confidence and skills that I needed to be on camera, and it's worked out.
That's interesting that you say that because I'm very similar, introverted away from work, but kind of flip the switch whenever you're at work and perform just a bit. But so for you, how do you kind of get through that? Was that a struggle all at first, trying to fight through that being an introvert?
I think for me, the biggest thing was finding my voice, really, and understanding that everybody's kind of figuring it out. I think that's one thing that I've definitely noticed throughout my career is that no matter where you're at in this, everybody's kind of just doing their best and in many cases hoping for the best. The thing that I found confidence in was preparation, right? Like I and it's something I still very much sometimes give myself anxiety over. For example, if we're doing a Thursday night game, I'm the sideline reporter. It's my job to not only be the eyes and the ears on the field, but also to get to know players, coaches, schools on both sides. And for me, I never want to miss anything because I feel like it is my responsibility, especially on the Thursday nights on E1, especially for some of these schools that are smaller, a group of six teams in college football, to really make sure that they're getting the most out of the platform. And I take that responsibility very seriously. And so I found a lot of my confidence really making sure I'm prepared, leaving no stone unturned. And through that, I think I was sort of able to understand, hey, if you do the preparation, everything that comes after that just kind of comes after that. And I don't think anybody's going to knock you for trying your best. Obviously, some people still will. But for me, it really just goes into the preparation and the care for everything that I do.
I mentioned you're from Atlanta, Georgia. You went to Georgia State University. And I would say very few people in Atlanta know much about Evansville, maybe outside of Brandon Gaughan, the TV voice of the Braves.
That's
But why are you so connected to Evansville,
right.
having not grown up from here? And I've heard you say, hey, it feels like a second home. I know you have some family here, but why is that?
I'm hoping to get an actual home there one of these days. For me, I guess if we go all the way back, I am a descendant of Lyle Station. Joshua Lyles was my great, great, great grandfather, obviously up north of Evansville by Princeton, one of the first black settlements in the state of Indiana. More recently, my grandfather, Carl Lyles, was the assistant principal at both Central and Wright, was also the first African American on the school board for the EVSC school board, excuse me. My great uncle was another educator that, quite frankly, still to this day, somehow people are like, hey, are you related to Emmett Lyles that taught at Dexter? Like, yep, I that is my great uncle. And just about any other Lyles that you see running around Evansville. So through my dad's side of the family, my dad went to Rice, by the way. That is my tie to Evansville. We always went up to Evansville growing up, whether it was, my dad liked to be home for the holidays. So it would be like before Thanksgiving, before Christmas. We might go up on a Father's Day, go see my grandpa. That just spent a lot of time in Evansville. And then as I got older, I would stay with my aunt and uncle, or my cousin and over at his house. And I would spend a week to 2 weeks. I think there might have even been a couple of times I stayed 3 weeks to a month just because I wanted to be up there, be around my family, hang out, get some Una pizza, go to Lick's, whatever the case may be. So that is really my tie. I also had some family members that graduated from the University of Evansville. So for me, I just always found the connection, not just because of my family. The thing that I was really drawn to as it pertains to UE, because my dad went to USI, like my dad did not go to UE. The thing that drew me to Evansville partially was the sports because. And it's funny, like I explain this to people. I'm like, hey, like, yes, the five national championships that the University of Evansville won were at the college division, or as we now call it, the Division II level. But if you do your research and you even read about the 65 Aces, a lot of people will tell you that that was the best college basketball team at any level in that season. And I just thought the history of that program, the care that the fan base showed, the resilience of the program after the plane crash in 77, it just has a lot of things that I find admirable, to be quite honest with you. And it's similarly to the reasons that I would come and visit Evansville, UE feels like home for me as well. And so I think that sort of, to give you a long-winded answer, is my tie and why this place is important to me.
So you mentioned some of the stories, that you were told about Aces basketball, before you were born, and kind of go back to what are some of your first memories of maybe watching the Aces or following the program, certain players or teams? Kind of when did that start for you?
Gosh, ever since I could remember, to be quite honest with you, you just hear names, Larry Humes, Jerry Sloan, Ed Smallwood. I mean, the list goes on and on and on through eras. I mean, still, and obviously this wasn't a long time ago, but, going to see Colt Ryan play, right? DJ Ballantyne, who's obviously on the staff now. And I think for me, learning the history and just to me, a lot of like the little significance of it, like even with the sleeves, like I did an article on the sleeves for ESPN 3 or 4 years ago now, and just sort of revisiting that. I think for me, hearing a lot of these things growing up, the greatness of Larry Humes, and I know members of my family knew Ed Smallwood very well, and just wanting to explore that. And to me, I think one of the things, and I've mentioned this in previous interviews before, it's kind of shocked that like nationally, the history of this program is not more well known, which, might seem insignificant to some people because they're like, well, why would people nationally care about a, this small town basketball program in Indiana? I'm like, well, look at it. Like, how could you not? Like, it's very unique, even just given the character that A-Rad McCutcheon was. And I say that obviously in the most endearing way, given the robes or his socks or just like all these different kinds of things. I just think it is like genuinely one of the coolest, like most tradition-filled programs. And again, I feel like just the significance of the resilience of, and I think one of the things that people might miss is not just the resilience of the university and the basketball program, but of the people of Evansville itself, to always lift this program up. I just think it's like really neat and unique because a lot of people in college athletics, obviously they care for their program. And I see a lot of different programs from, the highest of the high to, some of the more, I don't want to call them bottom feeders necessarily, but, a mid-major in group of six programs, the care for this specific program feels very different for me, given what I've seen. And I feel like I would feel that way if I was not even connected with it. It feels very unique.
One of the first stories you pitched when you was with SB Nation, I think it was October of 2016. You had the 40th anniversary of the plane crash coming up the following year, so about 12, 13 months away from that. And you want to do a story on that. That was one of your first kind of national stories with Evansville. You were there, with the UK win back in 2019. You mentioned the sleeves. You most recently did a story just about the city of Evansville with Madonna and her ties when she came and filmed A League of Their Own. So you have publicized a lot about Evansville. How has that been received nationally?
Great, honestly, especially the Madonna story. People were just like, is this real? And I'm like, yeah, it's very real. The it's interesting that I would say a lot of people have, and it's funny, like I guess I've written about Evansville so much now. I've legitimately had people reach out to me and be like, hey, I'm driving from Chicago to Atlanta, I'm going through Evansville, like where can I get some Aces gear, because they know, like, shoot, if someone's gonna be able to tell them, I guess I'm the guy, right? But I feel like a lot of the stuff, including the cool thing about the sleeve story, was people obviously recognizing from a certain era that this is that small town school in Evansville, Indiana. This is the team that wore the sleeves. I mean, there's a piece in there when George Bush recognizes and says to Barbara Bush, hey, that's he coached the team that that wore the sleeves. And so there's, to me, it's interesting because people are familiar. Perhaps the depth was not there previously. A lot of people knew about the plane crash, at least from what I found nationally, because of, I suppose the film about We Are Marshall was supposed to be about the UE plane crash. And again, I'm not certain of the specifics there. That obviously fell through. The movie's made about Marshall, but a lot of people knew about that crash because of that, from at least what I found. But to me, I think people do realize and have grown to see the how special this place is, and that it is different and it is unique. And there is a level of greatness that, quite frankly, a lot of other schools cannot say that they've achieved. And so I would say nationally, there is a lot of respect for Evansville, at least from what I've seen.
When I interview broadcasters on podcasts, I like to ask a question about their preparation. For you, I want to ask about kind of your preparation for doing a story. I mentioned about the plane crash, and you pitched that 13 months before the actual anniversary. This is not something that you think of, hey, I'm going to do a story on the Evansville plane crash, and it's done in 2 weeks. There's a lot that goes into it. So just kind of take fans through the behind the scenes work of that and just what goes into preparation for a story.
A lot of digging. I mean, a whole lot, especially for a story like that, where, it's something that happened 40 years ago. There's a lot of things that happened between now and then, including some people not being with us anymore, that were close to some of the people that were in that accident. I think it for me, it just took a lot of time. The one thing with a story like that is you cannot not rush it, especially if you're going to give it the proper care that it needs, which is one of the reasons why I brought it to my boss's attention when I did, is because I wanted them to know, like, hey, like, this is not going to be something that, you know, we put together willy-nilly. Like, I personally will not publish something if that's the way that it's going to be. I took a lot of time, obviously, researching, reading, learning about all the guys individually, finding out, you know, at least from who I could find. And understandably, not everybody wanted to speak for that story. But for the ones that did, also making sure that I took time. You know, like I was not like, hey, I'm going to call you and we got 30 minutes to knock this. I think my longest interview for that story was probably 3 hours, just because also there is emotional damage. There's PTSD involved there. And so to me, the most useful tool is just taking the time. Even with the story I did this past summer on Madonna, that's something that I had worked months on. Like many, many months. And I needed many, many months because I read every single Evansville Courier and Evansville Press, because for those of you that are like younger than, I don't know, 25, they used to be separate papers and now they're one. I read every single article from both papers. I'm not kidding. That had anything to do with Madonna, from when they announced that the movie was going to be not just back on, but then in Evansville from, I want to say the first one was in like 1990 until 1992. So I read like 2 years worth of articles from two different newspapers over the span of like maybe a month. Cause you know, part of me is like, yeah, I'll sit here for 8 hours a day and like just go through it. Like, you know, I want to get this thing done. But I figured, I was like, all right, I know enough about this because I've thought about writing the story for years. Like, I actually thought about doing that story at SB Nation. And I was like, ah, well, I'll be able to do this at a later date and give it more time. And obviously that was this past year. But to I use that as a roundabout way to say preparation, the biggest thing is just the time. You have to give things time. You can't rush things. You can go into a story with an idea of how it's going to unfold. I think the thing where sometimes people come up short is that they sort of stay grounded in what they go into a story thinking and don't ask follow-up questions or don't challenge things that even they thought or even something that they believe to be a fact. Ask the people that are involved to make sure that that is true, or even you might find another perspective on such a thing, which is something that I ran into a lot. Not for the plane crash story, but for the Madonna story, I definitely ran into that a lot. So for me, the biggest piece of any story is preparation, and there's a big want to in there. You got to want to tell the best story.
Man, I thought I was working hard preparing 2 or 3 hours for a basketball broadcast. Nothing like you do for one of those stories. I've seen you at a game, you know, game or two every year since I've, you know, had this job. You're still a big supporter, and I know you're close with head coach David Ragland, who just completed his fourth year here at the school. How'd you guys get connected, and what are your thoughts of David Ragland as a person and a coach?
It's funny. I actually did not meet David until he became the coach at UE. I actually got to know his sister first. Because she, and I believe the entire Ragland family, are friends with my cousins, and his sister lives in Atlanta. And so she would come over to the house and spend time with us. And I got to know his dad some as well, who honestly was somebody that at a time where, you know, I needed to hear that I could do this and do it well, you know, told me like, hey, you know what, I think you'll do all right, you know, in whatever path you decide to go on in your career. So I kind of got to know his family before I got to know him. But naturally, when he became the coach, you know, got to know him well. And really do admire, like, not just his work ethic, but also to me, the care that he gives. Because to me, when I think of this specific job, I think you need somebody not even just that understands the place, but has a stake in the place. And I feel like he's got that. And then obviously, in my opinion, he has shown a talent evaluation, or a chops for talent evaluation. I mean, some of the guys that we've seen come through the program over the last handful of years, you can't tell me he doesn't have an eye for talent.
He just completed his fourth year. You look at it, you kind of exclude year one with when he was hired. Year mm-hmm. two and three, I thought was highly competitive. Year two, probably his best season overall. And then obviously this past season didn't go how people wanted to. In terms of wins and losses, just where would you kind of evaluate, you know, following from afar and being a supporter, where the program's at after 4 years with Coach Ragland?
I understand a lot of people aren't happy right now. I don't think anybody's going to be happy with, what was it, 7 wins this year. Mm-hmm. David's not happy about that. Right? None of us want that. I think the thing that just stands out to me the most is I can't help but look at some of the players that have been brought in and then left. And if you put those players together And we can leave Gabe Pizzotto out of that because he got an amount of money that, quite frankly, like we're not going to match that. Evansville is not matching that. And that's okay. But when we talk about a Ben Hummerkaus, Tayshaun Comer, Chuck Bailey, even Cam Hafner, those are guys that if Evansville keeps, this is a team that is probably winning the Valley, like not just the regular season, but probably winning the Valley Conference Tournament. And so to me, I think we're still like Evansville's still in a good spot. And I know it doesn't feel that way right now. I completely understand that. But I would tell people and a lot of people view the current college landscape as a bad thing, right? Players are just in it for the money and whatever type of very broad label you want to put on it. I don't particularly believe that. In fact, I would go so far as to say, and I believe this very strongly. And in fact, I don't even think this is a thing that I just believe. I'm telling you something that I know. If there were a set of circumstances that the University of Evansville could go win at basketball again, right now are those circumstances. We are living in the circumstances under which if people really wanted Evansville to go win at basketball again, these are the circumstances now. And you have the hardest piece of that in place already with David. And I'm not saying that because I think he's a good guy. Because the names that I just listed, I think you would agree, Jevin, if we had those guys that I still listed, Evansville's winning the Valley, or at the very least competing at the top. So having the hard part out of the way, which is a coach that can actually go find talent, because you do have to have that when you are coaching at a mid-major school. When you have, in my opinion, one of the best fan bases in any sport in college athletics. I've seen, you know, just about everything that college football's got to offer, seen a lot of what college basketball has to offer. Everybody's very passionate about their team. To me, again, Evansville is different. And this is, again, the set of circumstances under which Evansville could go win at basketball again. And so because of that, I am hopeful. And based on some discussions I've had with Ziggy, with Rags, with Joel Zimba, I feel like Evansville's turning the corner. And I know after what you saw on the court this year, it doesn't feel that way. To me, the corner turning happens with a greater NIL budget. And to me, as long as that is in place, Evansville has a chance, especially with the current coaching staff, I feel like. And that goes past Rags. That goes down to Craig Snow. That goes down to DJ, right? Peter Funk, like all those guys, George, all those dudes. And how much I know that they care, because I've been in the Carson Center. I've been in each one of their offices. I see it. These are the circumstances under which I think Evansville can win again at. And it seems like from what I've been told that there's more of a serious push to compete in NIL, because you have to do that if you're going to win in any sport now.
I'm not going to bring up specific dollar amounts, but you mentioned, you know, Gabriel Pizzotto, he went to Xavier. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear rumors of what he got to go there. And if true, yeah, I mean, we're probably never going to be able to compete with that dollar amount. But the other players you mentioned have been Hummerkaus and Chuck Bailey, Tayshaun Comer. I think that is attainable here at the University of Evansville. Now, there are some fans that don't see the value in donating toward NIL so they can pay players, because that's an every year thing. And it's mm-hmm. not something like facilities that lasts for a while. So what's your pitch? Why should fans do that? What benefit do they get, you know, outside of wins? You know, how important is it for this program to get to that level to help out the community?
I don't want to, because it's not necessarily my place to tell people where to put their money or anything like that. And this isn't even me telling fans, hey, like, you need to go do this. But I will say, I really think, because I've also had discussions with people that are some of the larger boosters for the University of Evansville. And I know how badly they want to win again, right? We all want the same thing. We all want to see Evansville be great at basketball again. To me, I understand a lot of people very broadly hear NIL and they're like, okay, so we're just like paying the guys. Like, they should want to be here because they love the place. From what I understand, because I've gotten to know some of these guys personally, I walked with Yassine Toomey on his senior night, right? Like I get to know these guys. Like, Bryce Quinnett's a great dude. I met him earlier this year, you know, and obviously Evansville is great enough. And I know he's from Vincennes, I believe. But like Gage Bobe has stuck around, you know, like this is a great program and it has a lot to offer, whether you're playing basketball or not. And even if you're not making money playing basketball, to me, like, there's still a lot of value in a college education. You still need it to go get a job basically anywhere in the United States, whatever. But NIL as opposed to viewing it as like, God, okay, so we're just paying for guys and we got to do this every year, yada, yada, yada. NIL is the, and I sort of, told Ziggy, like, this is sort of how I think everybody has to view this. NIL is not just we're paying guys. This is the infrastructure of a modern college basketball program. So I understand, and I don't know which schools exactly, most of them are winning and some of them are not. Like that is a fair and honest caveat as well. Just having NIL money does not mean you're going to go win basketball games, but you are giving yourself a chance by doing it. And if you're not competing in it, you're not giving yourself a chance. NIL gives you retention of your roster. It can help you improve your roster. It can help you get replacements for guys that might go, because that is going to be the nature of the beast when you are a mid-major. And it's going to happen, honestly, if you're a Power 4 team as well. And it can help you maintain a standard of your program in a period of transition. All these things are natural. They happen before NIL. That's fine. But to me, you are not giving yourself a shot if you are not able to retain guys on your team. And you're not going to be able to retain everybody. But NIL, very broadly, is now the infrastructure of running, whether it is a college football team, a college basketball team, a college baseball team. Shoot, we've seen Texas Tech spend over $1 million for a softball player. That's just sort of the world that we're in now. And that doesn't mean just because they're making money now that they don't care about the place. I know that for a fact to not be true. I know how much Ben Hummerkaus liked it in Evansville, and different guys that have played here and some have not stuck around. And I think a way for people to look at it is, obviously, let's very broadly say you work at a bank and you're making X amount of dollars at your current bank. Bank A, or we'll say you work at Bank A. Bank B is offering you, let's even be like small about it and say they're offering you, $25,000 more than you're currently making. Well, you can work at a bank, Jevin, for 50 years. You get, for most of these guys, especially at this particular level, you get 4 or 5 years of maximizing your earning potential. And it's not that they're always going to go to the place with the highest dollar amount. I truly believe that Cam Hafner would have stuck around had he been basically offered anything to stay here. Chuck Bailey probably would have stayed. Tayshaun Comer would have stayed, like, especially not just because of the money, but because of the place, because of the coaching staff, because of the care that is put into this program. You're giving yourself a shot at maintaining what all of us want, which is something that looks like the old world of college athletics, right? I think it's great that these guys make money. I think they all should make money. It's going to be more difficult at a school like Evansville. However, you can't, in my opinion, look at the rest of the schools in the conference, whether it is the university themselves or the place in which the university plays. I can go from Newburgh over to the West Side. We can compete in NIL. We can. Like, it's just a matter of everybody coming together and deciding, hey, do we want to go win at basketball again? And that's not exclusive to Evansville by any means. And the reason I say this is because I've seen it work at different college football programs. Like, this is just sort of the nature of the beast. Texas Tech is a great example of a team that decided, hey, you know what? Like, we are going to put our wallet on the table and we're going to go win. And they have decided that's not even just a football thing. Like, they're doing that in basketball. They're doing it in women's softball. They're doing it in baseball. To me, I think a more probably congruent example that aligns more with Evansville, believe it or not, is Indiana football. A lot of people viewed Indiana football as like an NIL story. And I think it probably will be next year. Like, a lot of the guys that Indiana's bringing in next year are guys where they really put money down. Like, this is a guy that came from Michigan State. This is a guy that came from this school, that school, whatever. A lot of the guys, though, that produced for them this year were guys that they developed at James Madison. The reason I know that is not just because I have an internet connection and can do a Google search. I watched a lot of those guys play against Marshall in Huntington, West Virginia 3 years ago. And then I'm here in Atlanta, or, I'm down in Miami at the national championship game, and I'm watching D'Angelo Pons. I'm watching Kalon Black, who, by the way, ran or had 13 carries for 36 yards when I watched him play against Marshall. And then he runs all over Alabama in the Rose Bowl. Like, the hard part Indiana achieved. They've got the coach and the organization and the infrastructure to go be successful. And if Indiana football, who was literally the standard of bad for 125 years, can go 16-0 and win a football national championship, Evansville can go win in basketball, period. And again, to me, the hardest part is out of the way. You've got the talent evaluators and the recruiters on the staff right now. Like, you're sitting on it. Like, Evansville is, in my opinion, sitting on a gold mine. The thing that Evansville's just got to do now is have the infrastructure, and that is to compete in NIL.
I don't know if this is going to be a fair comparison because it is different sports, but for example, 2 years ago, Evansville baseball goes on the run. They were a win away from the College World Series. That was a group of guys that then all of a sudden just show up for 1 year and it clicked. You talk about infrastructure. There were guys that were 4 or 5 year guys here at the school. They cared about the place. They went on that type of run. And they always say sports is the best marketing tool for a university. And just the publicity that we got from that run for a 2 or 3 week stretch was incredible. Translate that to basketball, where if you can retain players for a couple of years, go on a run, obviously that gets the ball rolling, not only for the program, but also the university from a marketing aspect.
Yeah, without question. And then I think too, it sort of relates back to the things that we were talking about earlier. People start doing their own research. They learn the history. They understand the program for what it is, because that's not lost on any of us that follow Evansville athletics, right? Or understand Evansville as a town. And so I think once you start allowing other people to see that because you're consistently on the map, then it kind of starts taking care of itself. And so not only is men's basketball benefiting off of it, but as you mentioned with baseball, and part of the reason that baseball team was good is because there was a lot of continuity on it and guys were still around. But it does. It's a rising tide lifts all boats type of situation, right? And so to me, there's nothing but good that can come from it. And I don't necessarily think that anybody should feel that it is their responsibility necessarily. But I do think one of the unique things, and again, like one of the things that I think makes Evansville special, is if there were a place that were to come together and say, we want to accomplish this thing, I feel like Evansville is the place to do it. And I feel like Evansville is going to prove me right. Cause I do feel, and it is challenging, and it is hard to go out and ask people for money when you haven't been winning. I completely understand that, but I do hope that people see the bigger picture here. And this is something I discuss with a bunch of different schools at a bunch of different levels, whether it's here in Atlanta, at Georgia Tech. I've had discussions with guys in the Big 12 about challenges that they face, because this is a very complicated thing going on right now. But again, I think the benefit that Evansville has is that everybody is still figuring it out. And so the faster people in the university itself, because again, a lot of this falls on, and he would tell you this, a lot of this falls on Ziggy and the university itself and things of that nature. But it also relies on the supporters of the program. And I cannot be convinced otherwise that Evansville does not have one of the best fan bases in the country at any level. But that infrastructure does need to be in place if this is going to be what it needs to be. And again, I get eager just, again, looking at the last few years and being able to find the diamonds in the rough like a Ben Hummerkaus. I mean, I remember when Ben committed and people were like, well, who's this guy? And then 12 games in, we were like, oh my gosh, like we're 10-2. This is great. He gets hurt, and then Evansville finished at about 500. But you see, like, okay, no, like we can bring this guy up, we can get the most out of him, we can help him develop as a player, and from what I know that David does as a young man, and this can be something that's great again, because I do think, and it's tough when you're losing, but everybody wants the same thing here. Everybody wants to see Evansville win again. Everybody wants to see the Ford Center full. Everybody wants to see an on-campus arena again, or closer to campus arena, I should say. And that's possible as well if you start winning at basketball again. So to me, having that infrastructure, you're giving yourself a chance. That's not to say that you're going to go win the Valley every year, but that should be the goal. That goal is not realistic unless Evansville is competing in NIL. And given where I know the program was, not just this year, but the year before, compared to where the middle and the top of the Valley's at, quite frankly, this is what you're going to get until Evansville starts competing in NIL. But I do think that brighter days are ahead. I know how hard everybody's working, both administratively and on the coaching staff. And I trust that as long as the effort is there, that this can get right. And Evansville can be the program that everybody believes it to be and knows it to be and has seen it to be.
You're a history guy, especially sports history. Where does the IU football turnaround rank in your mind in terms of sports history?
It's the greatest sports story of all time. I cannot be convinced otherwise. I mean, coming into this season, IU had, I believe, the most losses in Division One, and because they haven't basically lost in 2 years, I believe it was Northwestern passed them up. But legitimately speaking, I mean, even a bowl appearance was like going to the Super Bowl prior to the last couple of years. And just to be the, and I think people think I'm trying to be cute when I say this, but it's a fact. Indiana was the standard of bad in football prior to Kurt Cignetti's arrival. Obviously, there were some bright spots with Tom Allen and Michael Penix, whatever. Like, that was real cool. But I think people have come to realize, like, oh, okay, like that was just kind of like another blip on the radar, you know, like similar to other years past. And just to me, to go 16 and 0, especially in this era, and given again the guys that produced for them, no one thought Fernando Mendoza was going to win the Heisman this past year. I mean, like a lot of us thought he was going to be good because he was really good at Cal. Like, I don't think there's any denying that. That's why Kurt, you know, he was like, hey, I want that guy, and you know, brought him in. But we're talking about so many guys that were looking for an opportunity, not at IU. They were looking for an opportunity at James Madison, of all places, which reputable program, great program. Like, they have a very long and well-known history themselves. But we're still talking, especially at the football level, the skill gap is massive. Like, I see it every week. I go watch a group of five or a group of six game on Thursday. And then when I'm at Texas, Alabama on Saturday, it's like, whoa, this is not the same sport. And so for a lot of those guys to be the anchor on a national championship team, it's incredible, man. And quite frankly, I think one of the coolest parts that has kind of gone undercovered is guys like Carter Smith, who was the left guard on that Indiana team this year. Carter was there when they were losing. Like, he stuck around because he saw Kurt's vision and got to win a national championship. I am certain that young man never thought that they would do that. I know I never thought that I would see Indiana do this in my lifetime. I legitimately have thoughts or memories of a couple of years ago being like, all right, like, yeah, like this has been cool. Like, they had a couple of like up years, but like, I never thought in my lifetime I would see what we just got done seeing. It's genuinely incredible. And quite frankly, it is a story that should give optimism for literally any single fan base in any sport. Because if Indiana football can win a national championship at 16 and 0, you can accomplish whatever you want as well.
What's the coolest thing you've done in your career? Not necessarily the, oh, I made it moment, but you're sitting there and you're like, man, you know, little Harry Lyles Jr. would be amazed I get to do this. What's one thing that stands out?
Man, you know, it's funny because it's not the biggest thing, but I think one of the things that I have the most pride in was having the opportunity to be a part of Around the Horn, because I so vividly remember that show starting when I was 8 or 9 years old. And I also remember telling my mom, like, hey, like Woody Page, like, hey man, I can debate him in a phone booth, like, and it's no issue, whatever, which like very naive thing of me to think. But I was very serious about my ambition to be on that show. And so not only just to be a part of that, but to do it here in Atlanta and be the first, you know, panelist to have that Atlanta behind me and to represent, you know, this city that I care about just as much as Evansville and love it for many different reasons. That one still holds for me a lot because that show was an institution. It changed sports television. It changed sports media. Shoot, it changed news television. Like, a lot of the stuff that people watch, I don't care what news network you watch or don't watch. I recommend not watching any of them, but whatever you do watch, a lot of that was born in those boxes on ESPN. They were. And so to be a part of that, to me, is something that I will always be very proud of. And obviously, I'm sure a lot of people watching or listening know that, you know, when I had my opportunities, you know, I would bring up Evansville as well, whether that was bragging about that I've got a subscription to the Courier and Press, or showing off the sleeve. So I think that one for me is the one where it's like, all right, like I'm just very proud of that. And very grateful for it because I generally do not take any of this for granted, man. Like, I know you probably have the same feelings. Like, we are very fortunate and blessed to be able to talk about and watch sports for a living. And so I take none of it for granted, man. Even every time I walk into a stadium, whether it's on a Thursday night and I'm getting ready to do the sideline for the game and that national anthem starts playing and I know we're getting ready to kick it off, whether we're in Blacksburg, Virginia Tech, you know, or Huntington, West Virginia at Marshall. I've done games here in Atlanta at Center Park Stadium, which was Turner Field. I grew up in that stadium. I've gotten to do games in that stadium, NFL stadiums I've done games in. I take none of it for granted, man. Every time damn near feels like the first time. And so it would be hard to pick one single thing, but I think probably again, being part of Around the Horn, that's definitely one.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I actually made a note about Around the Horn. I was going to ask about it because growing up, whether you get home from school before basketball practice, that was always something I turned on. I think it was on like maybe 3 or 4 Central Time growing up.
Yep.
And of course, Woody Page, what's the message going to be on the sign behind him? So I'm
Yep.
glad you brought that up. If you can, give me one quick story of what it's like to work with Woody Page.
Woody, man, it's funny because like so people don't realize before the show, I think people you mentioned it, like people don't understand necessarily all the preparation that goes into it. There would always be a production meeting at 10:30 a.m. Eastern that would usually go on for anywhere between like 25 and 30 minutes, unless Woody was doing the show with you. And then Woody, you would hear not just what Woody thought about whatever topics it were that we were preparing for, but just whatever other thoughts were streaming in his head. And it might kind of go off the rails and whatever the case may be. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, we've been in this meeting for 45 minutes or an hour, which like I was just kind of, I was kind of like, whatever, like I'm just happy to be here. Like this is cool, you know? And he's very, I think like the thing that people grew to know about Woody is that he's very thoughtful. I think earlier on in the show, when it was a lot more yelling and screaming, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that, by the way. I think a lot of people actually forget, like, I think even SNL spoofed Around the Horn at one point because it was used to, a lot of finger pointing and yelling and talking over guys, whatever. But Woody's just very thoughtful and very open-minded and very kind. And so I know for me, it was funny, like growing up, because I was like you, like you come home from school, get ready to go to practice, whatever you're watching the show. I never liked Woody. Like I felt like I disagreed with him on a lot of stuff. And I think part of the, one of the reasons I didn't love him growing up is because he was very strong in his opinions. And I'm like, hey man, just because you're loud don't make it right, you know? But I did appreciate him even younger, like knowing like, all right, like this is something that I want to do because I would like to go up against that guy. And so to me, obviously Tony Reale, one of the greatest, kindest people in this business, him and the combination of Woody. Obviously there were a lot of us that did that show, but you want to talk about two guys that really changed the game. Kind individuals, thoughtful. I don't think you could find anybody short of Jay Mariotti that's got a bad thing to say about either one of them. And that's the way it should be, man, because I'm telling you, like, those are two really good people.
All right, let's finish up with this. I know kind of what your schedule, what you're doing in the fall is. Here in the springtime, kind of what are you working on and where can people follow you?
Yeah, I think I've got one more Countdown to College Game Day show this weekend on Saturday, and then we will be doing a bracketology show on the ESPN YouTube and Facebook. So that'll be a good time doing that with Sam Ravitch, Myron Metcalf, and Jeff Borzello. And then I will probably be writing a few articles this summer. I don't know that any of them will be quite as unique as the Madonna and Evansville story, but I will be probably making some travels to some sites this spring, catching up with some football guys. And then outside of that, probably some NFL draft. I usually host our NFL draft digital show every year. And then social media, not a big Twitter guy anymore, but you can find me Instagram, TikTok sometimes, all social media at Harry Lyles Jr. And then, you might be lucky to catch me at Steve's Una Pizza or Lick's, probably on Lincoln Avenue. I sometimes go to the one off 66 in Newburgh, but you won't find me on the Lloyd Expressway, man. I'll tell you that. That construction is killing me.
I hope it's worth it whenever it's done.
Man, it better be. Are you kidding me? I mean, I'm just glad because I fly to Evansville a lot now instead of drive. I mean, I still drive on occasion, but for a minute there, man, coming down from the airport, whoo, 41, not a good time.
All right, last question. Who's your pick to win it all in college basketball?
God, I keep flip-flopping between Michigan and Duke. I'm gonna go with Michigan still. I know they just lost to Duke, what, like a week or two ago. I still think that they'll figure it out. To me, it's not necessarily that they're even more complete than Duke. I do think Cameron Boozer has the opportunity to put together the best one and done season of all time. And frankly, like if he was a little bit more athletic, he'd probably be getting more attention than he currently is, which he's getting plenty of attention, but the height doesn't seem like it should be there for a guy that's probably gonna win the Wooden Award. I just love what Dusty May's done. And I feel like it is a special talent for a team that has a decent amount of transfers to have meshed as well as they showed early on in the season. Like that is another thing that people don't realize when it comes to the continuity is so important. You're not always going to get your transfer guys to mesh as easily as it seems that Michigan has been able to do. So I pick Michigan, though I fear I might be wrong, and then Duke might prove me wrong. but I'm going to go with the Wolverines.
Well, Harry, thanks for your time this week. Aces on the Air. Appreciate all you do for Evansville. Always good to catch up and enjoy your spring coverage.
Yes, sir. I'm sure I'll see you soon.
That wraps up episode 50, Aces on the Air. It's brought to you by Tronies and powered by Learfield. For Harry Lyles Jr., I'm Jevin Rebin. As always, go Aces.
If you work in university maintenance, Grainger considers you an MVP because your playbook ensures your arena is always ready for tip-off. And Grainger is your trusted partner, offering the products you need all in one place, from HVAC and plumbing supplies to lighting and more, and all delivered with plenty of time left on the clock, so your team always gets the win. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, visit Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.